ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 49, Text 14. So I'll read the Sanskrit words to begin with, and then we'll take the verse together. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Iti. Anusmritya svajanam krishnam cha jagat ishvaram parudat dukhita rajan bhavatam prapitam, excuse me, Prapitamahi Shri Shuka Uvacha Ityanu Smritya Svajanam Krishnam Cha Jagat Ishvaram Prarudha Dukhita Rajan Bhavatam Prapita Mahi Bhavatam Prapita Mahi Sri Shuka Uvacha Ityanu Smritya Svajanam Krishnam cha jagat ishvaram Prarudha dukhita rajan Bhavatam prapita mahi Sri Shuka uvacha Ityanu smritya svajanam Krishnam cha jagat ishvaram Prarudha dukhita rajan Bhavatam prapitan mahi Yes, do you like to read? Sri Shuka uvacha Mahi
Sri Shuka Uvacha
Sri Shuka Uvacha
Ityanu Smritya Svajanam
Ityanu Smritya Svajanam
Krishnam Cha Jagat Ishvaram
Krishnam Cha Jagat Ishvaram
Prarudha Dukhita Rajan
Prarudha Dukhita Rajan Bhagavatam Prapitamahi. Ladies.
Sri Shuka Uvacha.
Anyone else would like to do? Okay. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Sri Shukdev Goswami said, iti, as expressed in these words, anusmritya, remembering, svajanam, her own relatives, krishnam, krishna, cha, and jagat, of the universe, Ishvaram, the Supreme Lord. Prarudat, she cried loudly. Dukita, unhappy. Rajan, O King Parikshit. Bhavatam, of your good self. Prapitamahi, the great grandmother. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Shukdeva Goswami said, thus meditating on her family members and also on Krishna, the Lord of the universe, your great grandmother, Kunti Dev, began to cry out in grief, O King. So let me just clarify the scene here and some of the words that are here, even though there's not a purport, I'd like to just add one or two things. First of all, Shukdeva Goswami is narrating this particular incident about Kunti Devi, who, as it mentioned here, is the great grandmother of Pariksit Maharaj. Not grandmother, but great-grandmother. So we can trace that back, and it's good to have some idea of the genealogy of who comes from whom and who comes from whom and so forth. So we have Pariksit, and his mother and father were... Does anybody know whose mother and father is? Huh? Yes, Abhimanyu was the father. Uttara. Yes, Uttara was his mother. And she actually almost lost him because Ashvatthama had thrown a brahmastra and wanted to kill him so that the Kuru race headed by the Pandavas would die out and that there would be no heir, but he was unsuccessful because although the brahmastra definitely reached and the heat of it did consume little Pariksit, and nonetheless, Krishna being in the super soul, being there, he entered the womb area and just created a new Pariksit for. And that's mentioned in another part of the Bhagavatam, so that when Krishna wants to kill someone, then there is no way that he can survive. And when Krishna wants to save someone, there is no way that he can be killed. It's automatic because his will is supreme, is all important and all powerful. It cannot be overcome. That is why we often say that thy will be done. If I do the will of Krishna, then I'm doing what is in tune or in harmony with his will. And because he is all good, all gracious, all kind, all sweet and all loving, whatever I do, if it be Krishna's will, must be good and beneficial not only to myself, but beneficial to the whole world. Because everything that Krishna does is like a ray of radiation from the sun. And it not only it just extends a little bit, but it extends all over the universe those rays go. So it's sometimes we may think that if we chant Hare Krishna, the mantra, that it's just for our benefit. But actually the mantra is a vibration. It's a holy vibration. And when it is said, it goes out into the ether, into the atmosphere. And it can influence, and it pervades. And it can change the general thought mood or the thought influence of a particular environment. That's how powerful it is. And the reason Krishna and Srila Prabhupada want us to chant the Hare Krishna mantra as often as possible is not only for our own advancement so that we can go back home, back to Godhead. Yes, that's true. But he wants everyone to go back home, back to Godhead. And when we chant it, it extends, it expands, it radiates. And what happens, although a person who receives that radiation or that vibration may be totally unconscious of it, nonetheless, when he receives a book, or he may hear the devotees chanting on the street, something inside him or her tells him that I should listen to this because he's already gotten it inside mentally. So therefore, there's a proclivity, there's an inclination, there is a tendency already, but it's unconscious, and it's becoming conscious by the ignition or by the of the mantra which he now hears in his ears and connects with the mantra which is there invisibly in the heart. And so when a person begins to hear the Hare Krishna mantra, and we have seen this, some people, we know we go out on Harinam and we start chanting, and many people will start chanting along with us, and they smile with us, and they'll clap with us, and they'll dance with us. Why is this? And yet there are others who are who also may have received the mantra but was so unreceptive to it that it will take many, perhaps millions and millions of more mantras to penetrate the thick crust of Maya that has enfolded them. So, but nonetheless, it's powerful and it keeps penetrating. And our business, of course, is to make everyone and anyone receptive so that they will accept this holy name and take it into their heart and then begin to chant it with a full understanding of it so that they too may go back home, back to Godhead. So that's a nice universal way of looking at it rather than just, you know, I'm thinking of my advancement. And it's the way Prahlad Maharaj wanted us to think. He himself thought, he says, I can't go to the forest, I can't go to the Himalayas now because if I go, then what's going to happen to all these poor people who are rotting away in the material world? How are they going to be enlightened? How are they going to be helped? How are they going to be guided? He said, if I'm here, just as when he had this little boys, and he was 5 years old, and so all of his little playmates, when it was time for recess, you know, to have some fun, you know, play stickball or kickball or whatever kind of ball they play, they used to throw a maliki fruits at one another and to one another. So they would generally have fun. But Prahlad said, why don't we just sit down for a while and talk about how we're wasting our life? And then he would begin, and he would get on this, as we might say, this trip of every moment is passing away. We're young children, and we may, any one of us could die at any moment. And at this moment, somebody's dying. And it doesn't have to be a man of 8, 90, 80, 70, or 60, or a woman. Sorry. But it could be a 5-year-old child. It could be a 3-year-old child. It could be a 1-year-old child. Death can come to anyone at every time. And don't you know that every one of these persons who generally are killed, what we call prematurely, although in actuality there is no such thing as prematurely, it only, from a material point of view, it's premature because we expect a person to live somewhere between 60 to 80 years old. I mean, that's an expectation because many people do. But our karmic reactions may dictate otherwise. And so a person may die, you know, at 4 years old. And he's thinking, or she's thinking, no, I can't. I'm a little boy, or I'm a little girl. I can't die now. Life is just fresh, and I'm going to just enjoy it. But it comes. Suddenly a disease hits him. You know, he gets asthma, or he might get pneumonia, and in 1 week he's dead. Or he gets food poisoning. We hear about all this all the time, you know, the different types of food bacteria that get in, especially to these people who, you know, who eat the what was that chicken producing farms, something farms, a foster farm, or something like that. Anyway, the important thing is that it can happen any time. And we should be very conscious of this. Srila Prabhupada emphasized that we should never be so complacent as to believe because my body is strong, my mind is strong, my intellect is sharp, I'm full of vitality and vigor, that, well, how can anything happen to me? Many people, they go to the doctor, they get a checkup, and the doctor checks the heart, he checks the liver, he checks the respiratory system, the nervous system, the blood, checks all these things and tells the man, you're 50 years old or 40 years old, whatever he is. He says, you are in excellent shape. I mean, we checked your urine, we checked your stool, we checked everything. There's not a hint of disease, there's not a hint of problem, there's not a hint of decrepitude. You're in great, wonderful shape. So be thankful. Thank God. And he says, wow, this is wonderful. I'll be so happy to tell my wife this when I get home, and she'll be happy that possibly I might even get another 25 years on this planet, or 30 years, who can say? So he leaves the doctor's office, and he's walking in a very jaunty way, swinging his arms, his chest raised, his eyes up towards the sky, and he's singing, zippity-doo-da, zippity-hey, my, oh my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine, plenty today. Zippity-doo-da, zippity, zip, ah, ah. He's on the floor, and he's dead. He's just had an angina pectoris attack. His heart gave out. According to the instruments, his heart was as strong as an ox's. But there you are. It was his time. It was his karma. And he was so complacent, so confident. Ah, I'll chant Hare Krishna. I'll do that later. I've got another 40 years to go. That's what he thought. And that's what so many people think. And that's why it's so important to take full advantage of every moment that we have. Every sage whom I've read, whether it's Jiva Goswami, or Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Srila Prabhupada's, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, Shukdeva Goswami, every one of them have said, time is so precious. And we must take full advantage of it, because unless you know your karma when you're going to leave this world, you should consider that you may be gone in 5 seconds. So if you cherish, if you treasure, if you hold tight to the holy name of the Lord in a very grateful and thankful way, and in a manner which suggests how great God is and how fortunate I am to know this fact. For example, I took advantage of this. I think I mentioned this in a number of my classes. I don't know if I mentioned it here. But for many years, I used to take a pen and just write the letter K on my wrist near my watch. Because whenever I would look at my watch, I would see the letter K, and it would remind me of Krishna. And not only that, but my watch, I got it as a result of a subscription I bought from Time magazine about 15 years ago. So, of course, Time, wanting to advertise their product, put the word Time right on my watch. And isn't that one of the names of Krishna? Time I am. Yeah. So every time I look at my watch, I see the word time, and it reminds me it's getting late, boy. You better really keep your mind on Krishna. And that K is just blazing up at me. I got tired of printing it on my wrist every morning. It came like a ritual. And since I'm getting older, I figured maybe I can ignore that one ritual. So I went to a tattoo artist. I did. And I went to the tattoo artist, and I said to him, you know, you see this K I have over here on my wrist? I said, how much would it cost for you to tattoo it in so that it's permanent, so that I die with it on my wrist? So he said, well, let me have a look. He says, well, our minimum is $50. I said, $50 for that little K? He says, well, that's a minimum. I said, but I'm a Hare Krishna devotee. You know, I'm a monk. I don't have much money. He says, well, you say Hare Krishna? I said, yeah. He said, well, my brother goes to that temple occasionally. All right, we'll take off $10, $40. So I said, sold. So in 15 minutes, I figured I'd get a donation somewhere. It's what you call a worthy cause. It's not some sense gratification. So he did that, and I looked at it. And at first, I didn't think it was going to come out because it just looked like some scratches there. You know how tattoos go. And then I was waiting for the week when it would actually really sink in. And sure enough, in 3 or 4 weeks, it was right there. And so every time I look at my watch, I'm seeing K, which reminds me of Krishna. And I'm reminded by that K that you could die in 5 seconds. So therefore, you've got to always be serious. Serious meaning, you know, it's not a time of frivolity. It's not a time of just playfulness. It's not a time for prajalpa. We've done that already. We know that. Been there, done that, finished with that. It's a time for getting super serious. Super serious means that, oh, Lord, I've wasted so much time in so many frolicsome, frivolous activities. I'm so sorry. I regret having done that. From the time I was a child, I should have been like Prahlad Maharaj, but I didn't have such parents to teach me that. But somehow my great real father, Srila Prabhupada, came and he told me the value of chanting your holy name. And in so doing, he convinced me completely. And having been convinced, I know that the more I chant your holy name, the purer I become, the closer I grow to Krishna, and the better my life becomes and the greater chance I have for going back home, back to Godhead. So please, my dear Lord, forgive me for all the times that I laid aside thought of you, ignored you, disregarded you, it's even decried you, disdained you, all these things to forget you. But Srila Prabhupada has come and he has reminded me of the importance of how significant your holy name is. And I'm so grateful to you for bringing Srila Prabhupada to me and to so many millions of persons who also are being reminded of the importance of God's, your holy name. So I beg one thing, that I constantly turn to my watch every 2 minutes to remember the fact that time is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. Prabhupada used to give that example of cows being on a line at the slaughterhouse. And they didn't know what was going on inside the house. And one cow would go in and then the door would shut. And the other cows were just grazing on the grass there, thinking everything was, as we might say today, cool. I mean, the grass is great, and I'm enjoying like anything. Meanwhile, he's moving up a step, moving up another step. She's moving up a step, excuse me, old ladies. She's moving up a step. And finally, he gets inside, and then what happens? A clamp comes down on her hoof, and then she's lifted up approximately 15 feet in the air, turned upside down, moved along a conveyor belt, and then Mr. Death himself comes and slits her throat, and she's even not even completely dead, and then moves along the conveyor belt, is dropped down, and there's somebody, another Dr. Death there to open up the whole front, and all of the you-know-what fall out into a pool, and it's moved down, etc., etc. I don't want to paint the gory picture. We all have an idea of that. The important point of this is that here that cow was just, you know, enjoying and thinking everything is going to go on. And we should think that that's not just the cow, it's us. And that's what Prabhupada told the story for. Don't get so enamored of this material world. Actually, the material world, when you get in here, it doesn't compare. I mean, look at this place. I've been talking about this place ad infinitum, and I probably won't when I go back to New Dwarka. I'd be a great salesman for this temple because I never stopped It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's glorious. Why would I even want to go out into the material world? This is why I'd like to die right here on this floor. Serious. It looks beautiful. Well, you got the clouds above you. You got the pink sunset over up on over there, and you've got all these different demigods dancing up and down around you. You got Garuda on one side. You've got Radha Kalachanji on the other side. Gornitai, Jagannath, Baladev, Lady Subhadra. Why would I want to go anywhere? You know, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. Even the doors. I see the way they've got this. I don't know what they call that, but those frame of the door, the golden frames that you have there. I mean, and these pillars are far out and out of sight. So I mention this because I saw it last night. There were so many devotees together singing in the atmosphere of this temple and enjoying it so much. They were all smiling, and some were dancing, and some were clapping, and they felt so at home because it really is our home. This is the true home, and when we become acclimated to this particular home, that's all we want to do is look at deities. We want to look at this beautiful picture of Krishna and the gopis. We want to sit with the book Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and read all about Krishna and the gopis and how they loved him so intensely and so absorbingly, and how they couldn't put him out of their mind. And we want to pray, Krishna, please, we know we're not worthy, we're deserving of such a grace, of such a benediction. Nonetheless, will you please help us? Help us to become worthy. Give us disciplines, give us penance, give us mortifications, give us austerities to perform so that we may become more dear to you, and in so doing, obtain more grace from you. And by obtaining more grace from you, we become purer and purer and purer so that ultimately we can go home, back to Godhead. Isn't that what we all isn't that what we desire, what we want, and where we should go? So prayer should be a very important part of our sadhana. It's not emphasized too strongly in our movement. We emphasize the chanting, but Srila Prabhupada mentions again and again that a chanting of the holy name is a prayer. It's, you know, my dear Srimati Radharani, my dear Lord Krishna, my dear Lord Ramachandra, please engage me in your transcendental loving service. It's a plea. It's a cry. It's a beggar asking to be inspired to do this chanting and to learn how to love the chanting. Lord Chaitanya mentions in the Shikshastika prayers, glory to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of conditional life, of repeated birth and death. This Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction of humanity at large because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It is the life of all transcendental knowledge. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss and enables us to taste the nectar for which we are always, what? Anxious. We all want to enjoy. We all want bliss. We all want happiness. We all want rapture. But where to get it? In the material world? How many ice cream cones can you eat? How many Snicker bars can you taste? You know, how many Hershey bars can you chew before you become tired of them, before they become tasteless? How many rock concerts can you listen to before your ears begin to lose their power to hear? Just parenthetically, I remember going and distributing books up at Dodger Stadium, and the Bee Gees, I never forgot that. Somebody gave me a ticket to get in. That was like a curse, because when I got up there, I didn't know. I never had gone to a rock concert. And those speakers, they were so loud that I could hardly hear myself trying to interest somebody with a book. So I would put a book, you know, in his or her hand, and I say, "Here, this book will help you, you know, feel more peaceful." And they say, "What?" You'll feel more blissful. You feel what? I says, "Here, take the book, read the book, love the book, give a donation." "Oh, okay, here's a buck for good luck." And that would be it. You know, how much could you say with those speakers pounding in your ears? And after a half hour of that, my ears were just literally ringing. I just got out as fast as I could. And that was the end of that. anyway, the important point that I want to leave everyone with, you know, in regard to this verse, is that we have this incredible opportunity to make advancement. And I know that as I walk out this door, I'm going to forget what I just said. I know I'm going to. But as soon as I look at my watch, I'll remember it. For 10 seconds. And then I'll forget it again. And then I'll remember it again. But at least the habit is being developed over and over and over again. I was about to mention a few moments ago that we need to develop this principle of prayer. Prayer is, Lord Chaitanya himself was always praying. He was in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And he was praying to Lord Sri Krishna, "My dear Lord, please come back to me. I can't stand the separation. My heart is breaking." In the Shikshastika, it's mentioned. I'm trying to remember the next to the last verse, which expresses that perfectly. Anybody remember the seventh verse of the Can I have the first few words, please? I need it in English. Like, in English. Oh, Govinda, yeah, I got it. Oh, Govinda, feeling your separation, I am considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain, and I am feeling all vacant in this world in your absence. I know no one but you, Krishna, as my Lord, and you shall remain so even if you handle me roughly by your embrace or make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You are completely free to do anything and everything, for you are always my worshipable Lord, unconditionally. So there's the prayer. Srimati Radharani is crying out, "Please, I want to see you. I want to be with you. I need you. I can't live without you. It's like my heart has been wrenched out of me and you have taken it away. And the only way I can feel whole is by meeting you again, and my heart will come back into its place." And then he finally says, "I know no one but Krishna as my Lord, and he shall remain so even if he handles me roughly by his embrace." I just said that. I'm sorry. thank you. Yeah, I wanted to go to the last verse, though. The first few words of the last verse. Anybody remember that? I know no one but Krishna as my Lord. Somebody handled me up by his embrace, that makes me completely free. No, we already did that. The last verse, does anybody remember? Okay. Oh, you're getting it at the book? I thought that was it. Okay, we'll move ahead. Anyway, the important point that I want to, thank you, the important point that I want to do, it's such an important verse. It is important for us because they're all essentially deep prayers which come from God himself, teaching us how to pray. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one could chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Why is that? Because when you chant in that manner, Krishna answers very quickly. And the answer that he gives you is transcendental bliss and peace and strength and confidence and love. And you're flooded with this love, and you can't help but feeling love for everyone and everything, whether it's a lion or a tiger or a cat or a human being or a demigod. Everyone becomes your brother. Everyone becomes your sister because you feel your loving relationship with them. And in this bliss, in this peace, in this strength, you're feeling so good, so happy, so within, so fulfilled, that you don't want to stop chanting it. So you go on chanting Hari Das Thakur, which is chant 300,000 names of the Lord, which at least for me would be an impossibility, or it would be like some kind of a challenge that I'd probably die at the end of it just out of boredom, because I'm not that pure in which I can actually appreciate that. But as we become more purified, we can appreciate more and more chanting, because what happens is that it's like yellow jaundice. When you take the rock candy, it becomes the cure. Although when you have yellow jaundice, everything is very bitter. The taste of your saliva is bitter. But as we become cured, the bitterness goes away. And we can then taste the sweetness of the rock candy. In other words, the ignorance that is surrounding the soul is replaced by vidya, or pure knowledge. And that's what the whole chanting process is about. It's the taking of the rock candy. And the rock candy, which may be bitter at the beginning because of our impurity. And when impurity meets purity, there's a little conflict, there's a discrepancy. But as purity within ourselves, or impurity within ourselves, gradually disappears, then purity meets purity, and they blend together perfectly. And when they're blended together perfectly, then you can taste the pleasure or the ecstasy of God's holy names. Okay?
Is there a question and answer period?
Yeah. Let's see. Where are we now? We'll do it at 8:30, because the class will end at 8:45. So we've got about 4 minutes to go before we start the questions and answers. Thanks for reminding me of this. I tend to forget that. And I often tend in many places to always go over by at least a half hour to an hour. So my pardon. It's called One Who Loves the Sound of His Own Voice. So what can I do? It's like Dhritarashtra is when Akrura says you should treat your sons and treat the Pandavas equally. So he answers saying, I wish I could, but my karma is such that I just can't. So he blames it on fate, you see. So that's my over-talking or talkativeness. I've just blamed it on my fate, but it's really my false ego. So I beg your forgiveness for this. Okay? What is that?
You should make us fortunate, just like you made those other people fortunate in the other places. Or
you can cheat us. we'll see what. Okay. Well, today. What is that? It's not cheating. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what he's saying is that if you cut it short, then you're cheating us out of what you didn't cheat some of the others, and you went a half hour over, and therefore that was, as far as he's concerned, it's pure nectar. As far as I'm concerned, it's just filling up my big bloated false ego. Nonetheless, I beg for the forgiveness of Vaishnavas and of Lord Sri Krishna. We're getting close to... But today I'm going to the Gurukul, and they asked me to read a story in a super dramatic way, like I do for the kids on the children's Krishna book. So therefore, I have no choice. To get there on time, I have to end this class in 15 minutes. So it's actually in 16 minutes, so I will say one more... make one more point, although I... Let me just get to the purport of the next verse so that the verse that will follow will be 17. The translation of the next verse is both Akura, who shared Queen Kunti's distress and happiness, and the illustrious Vidura consoled the queen by reminding her of the extraordinary way her sons had taken birth. And that extraordinary way is they all had taken birth by virtue of the fact that Kunti, as a young woman, she called upon them using a mantra that Durvasa Muni had given her, which would enable her to invoke the physical presence of of any demigod that she would want. And in so doing, she would then become pregnant by that demigod. The first time she tried it, she was just a young girl, no more than 12, 13 years old. And you know how when we're young, when you hear something so marvelous and so amazing as that, you say, is it really true? Can it really be? And she's kind of going betwixt and between, and she says, well, let me give it a try and see what happens. So she tried it out, and who should show up but the sun god, Vivasvan. And he came. He comes and he said, okay, my dear young lady, he said, it's time for me to impregnate you. She said, well, I don't want to be impregnated. I'm just a young lady. He says, well, it doesn't matter. He said, if you call me and you don't go through with what the mantra is supposed to accomplish, which is I'm supposed to bring you a child, then you commit an offense against the mantra. And that will result in some very bad fortune in the future for you. She says, well, but what am I going to do where everybody will see that I'm pregnant, you know, and I'll be the outrage of the entire kingdom. What will my father say? What will my mother say? He says, you don't have to worry about that. First of all, your pregnancy will be much different. You'll have your child immediately. So she went, oh, well, that's nice. What am I going to do with the child? He says, that's all been arranged. You're going to take the child and put it in a basket and put it on the river, the Aswa River, which will ultimately reach the Yamuna River, I believe. And the Yamuna River, some particular charioteer, and he's going to take the child and he will raise the child. She says, I can't raise the child. Can I just tell my father that you know, I found the child somewhere? He says, no, that child is destined to be born in a particular area. It's called Anga, and he would have a mother who's a Brahmin and a father who's a Kshatriya, and his father's name would be Atirata. Okay, so that was that, and so she when it was it's a very tearful scene when she has the baby in the basket and she puts it on the river. And even though she's about 13 years old, she lets the basket go so that the current will take it. And she can't let it go. So she goes and grabs it again and brings it to her. And tears are flowing in her eyes. And she's looking at this beautiful baby whom she got from the sun god who's glowing. And she doesn't want to let it go. But then again, she remembers what the sun god had said, that she must let it go, and even if she tries to keep it by some arrangement of Krishna, it's going to end up in Atirata's family. So she remembers that, and she's highly disciplined. Remember, she's a princess. She's been brought up by King Kunti Bhoja, and therefore she lets it go, and then we get this incredible, tearful, touching scene of her watching the basket going down the stream and slowly winding around a bend. And as it's winding, it's almost like her heart is in that basket and she's just ready to collapse just from the emptiness that she feels and the tearfulness that she feels. So she girds her loins, so to speak, and then goes back into her home. And we know the story that later on, many years later, she meets Karna, who is her first son. You see, somebody mentioned to me yesterday that wasn't he one of the Pandavas? And I mentioned, no, he's not a Pandava, he's an Atirata. You see, the sun god is his biological father. But why are the Pandavas called Pandavas? Because Pandu raised them. The father who raises you is the name that you get. Like Kunti is not her original name, it's Pritha, which she got from Vasudev and his wife. So that's her original name. But because Kunti Bhoja, the king, and his wife raised her, she's referred to as Kunti. Hardly anyone calls her Pritha except Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, O son of Pritha. Meaning son of Kunti. So in effect, he's not really a Pandava, you see, although he is a son of Kunti. No question about that. And he is what you might call a half-brother of all of the three of the Pandavas, three meaning the three that Kunti gave birth to. Madhuri is a different story because she had the Srini Kumaras, they helped her have the two twins, Nakul and Sahadeva. So I just wanted to get that, and I would like to now leave this open for any questions, Madhuji. I see your hand is up. Please, good and loud so that my dull hearing may... thank you for moving on up or closer.
The question is that yes. You were saying that Parikshit Maharaj was actually destroyed. You were saying that Parikshit Maharaj actually destroyed, burned to ashes in the womb of Uttara. But we also read in the Bhagavatam that Krishna... walked back and forth wheeling his club.
Mm-hmm.
And when he wheeled his club, Parikshit Maharaj was actually glancing and looking at Krishna and marveling at Krishna's beauty and wonderful self. And so my question is so he's looking at Krishna. So how is it that he was actually burned up?
There's another section, the section that you're referring to. It mentions that the Brahmastra, the heat of him, it mentioned the heat of it burned him, but he was shielded by Krishna's I don't know if his hand or his discus, but he was shielded by Krishna. But Krishna was inside. He was inside the womb. He was wielding this club. Okay. So, but there's another section in the Bhagavatam which mentions that it's not in the section that you're referring to. It's in another section. And if you go through the index and you look at the, I'm trying to remember it. Anyway, that a word that will bring you to that other part. You will see that it mentions that the first body that was there, which was the conception or the materialization of Uttara and what was his name again? Her husband, Abhimanyu. Yeah, that form was definitely consumed. It's mentioned in that area. And Krishna, who was there, he created another form. Now, in that area, I'm trying to get the time sequence together, is when he may have... wielded the club to prevent any further attempt to hurt him. And when he created this new body of Parikshit, he was completely protected by Krishna at that point in time. As I said, there is another section, and it may be a few hundred pages away from the section that you are, and I believe it's in another canto, the fourth, if I'm not mistaken. It's a different canto. Yeah, okay. Yeah, thank you so much. Any other questions that some of us may have? Yes, Prabhuji. Oh, go ahead.
I just had a quick question.
Please.
This pastime sounds a lot like the pastime in the Bible with Moses and the little, you know, the cradle, they put the baby in the river.
Oh, yes.
Moses' mother. And,
yeah.
Is there any correlation between those two?
Not that I know of, but sometimes things do repeat themselves. There's a tendency for that. But yeah, I do remember, and Moses was found by this princess, and she raised Moses. In the case of, but the difference is that Atirata, of course, was just a charioteer. He was not he was not in royalty. Although he did know, it's mentioned that he did know Dhritarashtra, and he was obviously a very great charioteer during his heyday of driving chariots, but he was definitely not in the royal family. He lived in Anga, and Anga was a place which was reserved for what we call half-castes. A half-caste means a person, he is a kshatriya, and his wife was a Brahmin. So generally in those days, if you were born in a mixed caste, this was not considered highly auspicious. Okay? So therefore, they were given a separate area in which to live. Anga was the place. And Karna, Anga was, by the way, like a province of, if you might call it, Kurukshetra. It was owned and operated and managed by the Kuru dynasty. And that's why later on, when there was a tournament, and Arjun is winning the tournament, and Karna comes and challenges him, but then there's an objection that he's not a king, so how can a non-king challenge a son of a king? So what happened was that Duryodhana, he went to his father and said, well, can we make him a king? He says, so that he can defeat Arjun, and then we've got a champion in our midst. We can destroy those Pandavas with this guy Karna. He said they knew Karna. He was in the Gurukul of Dronacharya, but then he left after a certain period of time. Now, Dronacharya would not teach him the advanced astras because he wasn't a pure Kshatriya, you see, and he wasn't a Brahmin either. So he did get them by deception. He went to Parashuram and impersonated himself as a Brahmin. He learned everything that a Brahmin would know, and he acted like a Brahmin. But then Parashuram discovered that when there was a little insect which bit right into his leg, and the insect was biting deeper and deeper, while Parashuram had his head lying on the lap of Karna while he was taking rest, and Karna was just gritting his teeth, just holding his fists, and he wasn't moving. So the blood came down on Parashuram's face, and what happened? He woke up with a start, and he saw that insect. So he took the insect, pulled it out, and killed it immediately. And he said, "How do you do this? A Brahmin doesn't have such endurance. A Brahmin is not taught to resist pain the way Kshatriyas learn how to resist pain. How did you do it?" So Karna was a little tongue-tied. Are you a Kshatriya? Tell me the truth. Well, I want to know the truth. Well, it's kind of, sort of. What do you mean, kind of, sort of? Well, yes, I am a Kshatriya. Why did you lie to me? And then after that, he cursed him that one day he would be on the battlefield face to face with someone equal to him, and he would forget the mantra for the Brahmastra, and he would not be able to throw it, and that's why Arjuna was able to kill him. Well, that's the real reason, is that he had Krishna as his friend. But the ostensible or external reason is that he couldn't remember the Brahmastra. Anyway, these pastimes are very well. We started on a particular point. What was the what was your question again? Can I just, because I want to tie it together. Oh, Moses, yes, okay. Yeah, so anyway, I had begun. So what had happened was that Duryodhana, he had the priests, what they call, coronate Karna right there on the tournament grounds. So after coronating him and all the mantras being chanted and the bath that he took there, he was then a king of Anga, which is where he was raised. And as I said, Adirata and his mother, Radha, that's where they were from. So I mentioned this because I didn't know this until I read the Mahabharata, that they were considered, and our great one of our great Sanskrit scholars who passed on rather fairly recently, he mentioned to me that, yes, they were not in a different caste, but they were an outcast, and that's why Draupadi, when Karna, when there was a challenge of the Svayamvar to win her hand, when Karna picked up the bow and he could do whatever Arjun could do, she said, "Stop." She said, "I would never marry him." And what was the basis of her not marrying him? Well, first of all, he was a friend of Duryodhana. That was her main reason, because Duryodhana was just an envious snake, and she didn't want anything to do with the family, with Duryodhana and company. So then he said, what is the basis? Well, he's not a pure Kshatriya. So that was grounds for her not to marry him. So he was so angry. And that's why he took it out on her when the time Dushasan tried to strip her down. He was laughing and applauding and doing all this as a mark of vengeance. Interesting, Karna was so charitable and kind and warm at one moment, but he could be so hostile to just because he wanted to win the approval of who? Of whom? Duryodhana. Who enabled him to become the king that he always wanted to become. So we have a little different situation there. We have Moses becomes a king. Well, not a king, he's a prince. But then he goes back to his roots and he becomes just a leader of the Jews. And he takes them across, he frees them from Egypt and takes them across the desert. And it's a bit different from this particular situation. Yes, any other questions? You had a question, Prabhuji? This will be the last question because I'm going to have to get ready to leave.
You mentioned yesterday that about whether somebody needs a doctor or not. And we saw in Srila Prabhupada's example that he consulted doctors, used doctors, but at a certain point it seemed like he was just giving himself to Krishna and not worrying about trying to be cured. You know, so I was wondering, since we're all diseased to one extent to another, and we're all,
yes,
there's some point where the inevitable means that we can't be saved by any medicine or doctor, but at the same time, how do we know how long you go and try to find a cure for your ailments and,
yes,
try to become well, and when you just give up and go back to Godhead?
Right. It's a good question, really good, because it concerns all devotees. However, Srila Prabhupada did mention, he did mention that if certain medications have been proven to cure, maybe not cure everyone, but it has cured a number of persons. For example, penicillin, it cures certain diseases almost invariably until and unless the body no longer, when the penicillin goes in, what happens, it no longer, as a result of taking too much penicillin, and then the bacteria, they begin to become immune to the penicillin and it doesn't work anymore. Okay, but the point is this, is there are many medications which have been proven through scientific research to have worked, but not necessarily 100%. Some of them work 90%, some 80%, some 70%. And especially some of these antibiotics, they work quite well as long as the resistance in the body is still good, and it has, and the antibiotic is no longer so strong that it can overcome the bacteria. As long as you have that situation, what Srila Prabhupada said is that we should take the medication because Krishna works through many different ways. He may cure you through food. Sometimes people go on a grape juice cure. I've known people to get cured in that way. Or they go on an orange juice cure. Or they go on no food cure, they don't eat for 5 days and then they're perfect. I've done some of those things myself where I had a terrible pain. I went to an acupuncturist and I took some medication, nothing was working. And I said, well, what am I going to do? I said, well, I'll stop eating. Maybe that's the austerity that Krishna wants me to practice. So I didn't completely stop eating. What I did is I fasted just on simple fruits and simple vegetables, no salt, no pepper, no sweets or anything like that. And it went on for approximately, if I recall, one full week. And I went down from probably 120. I do remember I went down to 112 pounds. And I kind of looked a little bit like the wind could blow my body away at any moment. It disappeared. It was a pain going down my arm. Every time I would move my arm like this, the pain would manifest. So there's an example of how diet can sometimes cure you. If you try this, you try that, and this doesn't work, that doesn't. So Krishna says, I am the healing herb. Okay, in Bhagavad Gita. So certain times herbs may work, or the medication may work, or nothing may work. So Srila Prabhupada is saying, take the medication, because good karma can work through the medication too. If Krishna says, I'm the healing herb, or I'm the medicine, I'm the medication, that may be the means by which you get cured. or it may not be. So take it and see what happens. If you get worse, don't take any more of it, for sure. On the other hand, Prabhupada says, don't put your full faith and put your full stock in medications. Put your full stock and faith in Krishna. Because as Krishna says, he can work through the medication if that's the way he wants you to be healed. Sometimes it's such, though, that the Lord likes people to have faith in things or objects. There are many saints who have the power to heal by prayer. And so they will get into prayer, but before they pray, they say, I want you to take this little vial of water, and you drink it. And then after you drink it, I will bless it so that it has holiness, and hopefully you will be prayer. You will be freed. So they begin to pray and pray for 10, 15, 20 minutes, and then the person takes the water, and then almost miraculously, he's cured, or she's cured. And he says, this is amazing. And he's thinking, well, it's the water. But it had nothing really to do with the water. He didn't want to take the credit for himself. He wanted him to think that the water was the cure. So that he didn't get proud and puffed up and conceited and vain. Very often saints, they don't want to. So then what they're saying is the water. So then the saint would often say, it's the Lord in the water. It's God in the water who has cured you. Because Krishna says, you know, I'm the taste of water. So therefore, saints generally don't like to take credit. They always like to give the glory to the Lord because that's their natural humility, you see. So therefore, the answer basically is, yes, take the medication. And if it's working, then continue to take it. If it's not working and it's making you worse, then stop taking. But throughout the taking, do pray to the Lord, not necessarily to get cured. That's not what we should be praying for. We should be praying for the knowledge that Krishna wants us to have through or from that disorder. Quite often, one of the important points is that we often become enamored of the material world and we forget that death is around us. We forget that it could come at any moment and we become caught up in the pleasure of the world, or the pleasure, it could even be prasadam, it could be just pleasure in our life. And Krishna is saying that you're forgetting me, you see. You're enjoying the taste of the prasadam, but you're forgetting that I'm in the prasadam. You're not even thinking of me, that I'm what's making the prasadam tasty. So one of the ways he helps us to remember that is to remind us that this body is not going to be here forever. It has a short period of time and it will be over. So don't forget me. Remember me. Take shelter of me. Let me guide you. Let me help you. Depend upon me. This is what he wants. And the more we do that, we will find, assuming that our diet is a sattvic diet, we will have less and less disorders and diseases because Krishna will not have any reason to wake you up because you're already awake. He doesn't have to tell you to remember me because you're remembering him. So sometimes pain is really a blessing in disguise. And if we take it as a blessing and we welcome it and we thank Krishna for it, we get the understanding of why we have it very quickly. And if we get that understanding, then we immediately pursue remembering Krishna more often than normally. And we may again slide, but again, Krishna will give us, one day he gives us an earache, another day it's a headache, another day it's a shoulder ache, another day it's a stomach ache, until we get the point of always remembering Krishna. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, because there's no one more blessed, no one more beneficial to think of than Krishna and his pure devotees such as Srila Prabhupada. So I'm going to end that. Does that answer your question, Prabhuji? Okay, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being here. It's really, again, I feel like I'm leaving home. I said that at the beginning, and I'm saying it again. You've all been so well. I feel like you're all really my... Well, I don't feel like. I know you're my brothers and sisters, and it's really a pleasure to interact and interrelate and share these teachings. It's not that I'm teaching you anything. I'm just awakening or re-arousing something that you already know. Okay? Hare Krishna.
His Holiness, Amala Bhakta Maharaj, Ki Jai.
I've just been initiated into the sannyas order. So, without the approval of the GBC, what will come down on my head next?